The Athletic.
Hello, listeners. Sorry to interrupt your show, but we've got a small favour to ask. We're currently doing a bit of a survey to find out more about you, your podcast listening habits, and the sort of adverts that are most relevant to you. If you feel like helping, please head to surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. That's pretty catchy, so I'll say it one more time. surveymonkey.com/r/athleticaudiouk. Thank you.
Was trying to get there. Giroud! Oh, yes!
The ref even said to H, I heard him say, if I say it's a pen, then it's going to cause a lot of talk about it after. So, you know, I don't know what happened there.
If you're the coach of a strong team, you have difficult decisions. This was a very difficult decision, leaving Billy Gilmore and Tino Anjorin and Tammy at home. It's not personal.
Straight out of Cobham, the weekly Chelsea FC focus podcast from The Athletic. On this episode, reacting to the draw with Manchester United. It won't take long. Also, Chelsea put one foot in the Champions League quarterfinals. We'll look ahead to a double Merseyside matchup, answer your questions and more. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Out of Cobham. Hello, listener. Thanks for joining us, whether you're a first-timer or a long-timer. We're pleased to have your company. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, joined by the three men who know more about Chelsea than most. Simon Johnson's with us. Hi, Simon.
Hello.
So too, Dominic Fifield.
Hello.
And it's a welcome return to Liam Toomey.
Woof.
Hope all's well in doggy world. Right then, we're recording the morning after Chelsea's drab goalless draw against Manchester United. That's our first port of call today. Chelsea 0, Manchester United 0, every bit as exhilarating as that sounds. Callum Hudson-Odoi probably should have had a penalty awarded against him, then he hurt his leg. Match report ends. Luckily, dear listener, you and your kin have submitted some questions via the medium of Twitter to give us something to discuss. Before that, though, the penalty that wasn't, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's criticism of, and this is a real thing, the match preview on the Chelsea website. Simon, what did you make of those two things?
I'm still laughing at the Chelsea website being that, you know, sort of influential on such a big game. I think they should be doing more pieces like this every single week. And maybe Chelsea, that's the secret to getting into the top four. I just find it a bit rich that Manchester United, who've had more penalties than most over the last 18 months, are complaining about the decision. Yes, it could potentially have been a penalty. It was weird, though, because Mason Greenwood didn't even appeal. Neither did any of the Manchester United players. I just think that I always thought that it was only cup competitions you could win on penalties, but Manchester United clearly think that they can win the Premier League on penalties, too.
Tom, there's a wider point here about the standard of refereeing in the Premier League. A lot of criticism of Stuart Atwell afterwards and his supposed comments to Luke Shaw and others. Almost feel like it undermines how VAR is working a bit if the on-the-field referee doesn't have much control over things, which is something I often think when Stuart Atwell's refereeing a game.
Yeah, although the irony being that Stuart Atwell actually decided that his decision was right and that the VAR's advice was wrong on this occasion. I think he railed back slightly on the... was it United anyway, railed back on the suggestions of what Luke Shaw and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer appear to have heard Atwell say to Harry Maguire, but it says everything really that the original assertion from Shaw seemed plausible. I suspect that referees probably do feel undermined to a certain extent by the fact that a fellow referee can tell them that they're wrong on the pitch. I also think there's an element of a bit like the third umpire in cricket where some referees will feel they have a safety net now and that VAR provides that and therefore they don't have to make a bold decision necessarily out on the pitch and that VAR will bail them out if they do drop a clanger. And that's a dangerous situation to be in as well. But it's all part of the adjustment to a very different system, I guess, and something that we're just going to have to put up with. It has been a bad weekend for referees and I've never seen a referee lose the plot like Lee Mason did in the Brighton West Brom game. The look of horror on his face as he realised he had completely lost all sense of control I actually ended up feeling quite sorry for him because he just looked lost. And he would have been the fourth official on Sunday as well in a game and then pulled out with that calf injury. It's a convenient calf injury. Yeah, it's just what it is, unfortunately. It is a mess, but it's a period of an adjustment. I think that Callum Hudson-Odoi was very lucky. I don't think it matters that Mason Greenwood didn't appeal for it or United's players didn't appeal for it. His arm was in an unnatural position as he jumped. Everybody on that pitch thought that Mason Greenwood's arm made contact with it, but the reality was that, as a video showed, that it was Callum Hudson-Odoi's. But great, fantastic, got away with one.
Liam, if we look at the Chelsea perspective on the game, you were at the Bridge for The Athletic. Your post-match piece was looking at the positives provided by Kante and Kovacic negating the opposition. Certainly worked on Bruno Fernandes, who barely had a sniff.
Yeah, so I think where we are with the Tuchel project is that most of the things they do well are the least sexy things that a football team can do well. And that's why I think this team is struggling to resonate with a section of the fan base, and to the extent that it's probably just as well that Stamford Bridge is empty right now, because I don't think a lot of these performances would be getting rave reviews from inside the stadium. But Chelsea are doing a lot of things right that they weren't doing, particularly, you know, sort of December, January. They're pressing really, really well. And one thing that struck me during that game on Sunday was just how, I mean, it's not the first time this has struck me, but it really sort of brought the point back to me. It's just that pressing is the most important aspect of modern football. And you could see from early on that Manchester United would much rather press than pass. And they actually wanted Chelsea to have the ball. And their entire game plan was forcing a mistake from one of Chelsea's back four or five. And I think in the past couple of years, and this is not an indictment of Lampard, because I think it's happened under several coaches, they may well have got that mistake, because I think Chelsea always had that in them when they were trying to play out from the back. It happened under Sarri as well. But they were really, really good at it against United. I think when they did misplace passes, they were out of play. They weren't to dangerous areas. They were very smart and they played around United's press a lot and really tired United out to the point where I think United had to drop back in the second half because they'd run their race. And you could see Bruno Fernandes was really, really frustrated with the amount of times he was just bypassed, primarily by Kante and Kovacic. And as I said in the piece, before Tuchel brought that combination back against Southampton, we hadn't seen it since that awful first half against West Brom, where Chelsea were 3-0 down at half-time and Kovacic was subbed along with Alonso. And it's always seemed like a combination that looks really good in theory, but has never quite worked in practice. But it did work, I thought, against United. I thought Kante was probably Chelsea's best player, just doing all the things that Kante does best, mopping up counter-attacks. The one near the end, where he knocked the ball away from Martial, was potentially a draw-saving intervention. He used the ball really well as well. And Kovacic was Chelsea's primary passer and really set the stage for their possession control. It's still not resulting in chances on a consistent basis, and it's not resulting in a cascade of goals. And so I can understand why fans are going to be frustrated. And I think there's frustration at Chelsea as well about that. But they are doing a lot of things right in terms of the foundation, and Kante and Kovacic were a big part of that.
So they started, as ever, a Tommy Tuchel team sheet, notable for the players not included as much as those who were. We'll get to some Twitter questions. Here's at Don Caratassi asking, Tuchel says he can only select 18 out of 21 players for his matchday squad. Why is he wasting one of them for two left-backs? Surely you can leave one of two left-backs out and include Tammy Abraham or Billy Gilmore. Simon, they were the real notable absentees, I suppose, from the team sheet. Not looking good for Tammy in particular at the moment, as we've touched on in recent weeks.
Yeah, and I touched on it again in a piece about Olivier Giroud after his heroics against Atletico Madrid, that perhaps the certainty of Giroud leaving in the summer when his contract expires isn't a certainty. And one of the reasons why I flagged that is because of Tammy Abraham and his situation. Look, it's too early to say that it's all over for him under Tuchel, but it is pretty alarming that he started, I think he's only made five appearances In two of those, he's been hauled off at half time. And there was talk that it was an ankle problem. Firstly, why he was taken off at Southampton. Well, that wasn't true because Tuchel said afterwards that it was nothing to do with an injury. There was talk ahead of the game when he was left out of the squad that it was due to the ankle injury. Again, Tuchel made it clear afterwards that that wasn't the case, that it was his decision. That's got to be very alarming. He went on to explain that he saw Werner and Havertz as the backup options as a striker on the bench. Now, if you're Tammy Abraham, you must be sitting there thinking, well, hang on a minute, I don't even make the squad now. It's pretty worrying for him, but he's got to turn it around. His performance at Southampton was poor. Whether he was affected a little bit by that ankle knock that he'd suffered against Newcastle a few days before, as I said, Tuchel said that wasn't the case, but he does seem to be facing an uphill battle early on to win Tuchel over. As for Gilmore, that's not such a surprise because he's not been involved very much at all, apart from the cup game. I think Tuchel's only kept him around, prevented him from going alone in case there's an injury to one of Kovacic, Jorginho and Conte. And as for Emerson being on the bench, I think you have to remember that against Barnes, I think it was, he played as a left-sided centre-back. So perhaps that's one of the other reasons why he's on the bench, that he's covering two positions, not just one.
And while we're talking defence, Dom, we had several questions for people asking whether it was time for Chelsea to change the shape of the back four, which I find a little bit odd, given that that's not really been the problem. They've been keeping clean sheets for fun. Amongst them, here's Josh, who says, is it time for Tuchel to switch to a back four, especially with Silva not far from fitness? This isn't the area of the pitch that's a concern at the moment, is it?
No, not in the slightest. I mean, you could argue that there's an issue in terms of balance. You know, are they overly concentrating on the defence? But as Liam very eloquently said, it's about setting a foundation down. It's about having something to build on. And that was his first job. And we spent 6 to 8 weeks saying how open Chelsea were, and the board reacted as a result of the way that results had deteriorated because Chelsea were so open. So it seems a bit churlish now to turn around and say, actually, we need them to be more open than they are at the moment. Give him a chance. He's only been there for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Before we move on from Manchester United, several burner accounts with an IP address that can be traced back to an L2 mean Ealing have asked for a status report on Kai Havertz. Not involved yesterday. Why not? Is it because he's been pretty rubbish since he arrived, Liam, or am I being a bit too brutal?
Oh, here we go.
Wow.
Two-footed challenge.
That's incredible. I think he had a badly timed injury absence, didn't he?
Which you're going to say transfer then?
Well, remains to be seen. But he certainly had a badly timed injury absence, just as Tuchel was trying to put things in place for the team he's building, and that's hurt him. I mean, Tuchel said a lot of positive things about him. You don't really know what to do with that because Tuchel seems to be saying glowing things about all the players he's not playing right now. So it's very, very difficult to read where he stands. But he has been incredibly complimentary of Havertz. And we know the fact that Chelsea paid so much for him, the fact that Roman Abramovich was heavily involved in the, you know, the process of getting him and in Chelsea's interest in him, means that, you know, that there are a lot of incentives to give him a chance at some point to prove that he can be a central part of this team. And I think in the system Chelsea are playing, there's no reason why he can't play any one of those attacking roles in the three. And I want to see him. I want to get a look at him at least as a false nine. I don't think we really got a proper look at it against Liverpool early in the season because of the red card and everything that happened in that game. And Tuchel has spoken quite openly about his ability to play as a false nine in the last couple of days. So it is something I expect him to turn to, particularly in light of the fact that Tuchel clearly doesn't think Tammy Abraham has much to offer right now. And I think aside from the goal he scored against Atletico and the chance he almost scored against United, Olivier Giroud hasn't really offered a ton either from open play. Certainly not a lot of the little things that he usually does to help a team. So that I don't think Chelsea have an awful lot to lose by trialing Havertz as a false nine, and I expect to see it in the next few games at some point.
What an asset he would be as an option, as a nine. I mean, I know I was flippantly laughing before, but he's clearly a player of huge, huge talent. And if he could establish himself as a nine, it would get Chelsea out of a major hole, not least because it would knock down one of Simon's big transfer stories for the summer.
Oh, I think they'd still rather Haaland up front.
I know you would.
I think most people connected to Chelsea would want to see Haaland at Chelsea, but
yeah.
I think you may need to wish.
I'm basically just trolling this account, aren't I? That's all I do. is that the modern expression?
Lob a few coins in wishing wells, Chelsea fans, as far as Haaland's concerned. Might take a lot of coins, actually.
Oh, yeah, literally. You would have thought so. Well, there's plenty of games coming up for Kai Havertz to be involved with. We'll see if he's in any of the ones which are coming up in the next week or so. We'll preview those later as we turn our attention back to domestic matters. Next, though, bicycle kicks in Bucharest. So, after our last show, Chelsea flew to Romania for the, inverted commas, away leg of their Champions League last 16 tie against Atletico Madrid. As you'll know full well by now, listener, it went pretty well. Olivier Giroud's spectacular goal, giving the Blues a thoroughly deserved 1-0 victory ahead of the return leg on the 17th of March. Dom, where did this rank in terms of Chelsea's best away performances in recent times? Better than Sevilla? Better than Ajax last season?
Well, yeah, given where Atletico are in La Liga, it's right up there. I mean, it's warped slightly by the fact that they were playing in Bucharest as opposed to at the Wanda Metropolitano, or whatever it's called now. And I think that was an advantage that Chelsea exploited really, really well. I'd be interested to see what happens in the second leg in as much as the venue thing. I know that UEFA are making decisions this week on a lot of the ties, and I mean, Liverpool, for example, don't expect to be playing their second leg at Anfield. I do wonder whether that means that Chelsea dispatch somewhere else in Europe, and which might, I suppose, make the second leg more even, and therefore the advantage of a 1-0 away win slightly less significant. But where we are at the moment, that is a tremendous result. That is a result that none of us saw. You know, go back 4 or 5 months, none of us envisaged that. I mean, that looked like the worst possible tie that Chelsea could have got. For them to go away and A, keep a clean sheet and nick an away goal, and a fantastic away goal at that. Sensational result.
And also, Simon, a tactical triumph for Tuchel, which is not an easy sentence to say. but is it kind of vindication almost in this one performance alone of making the managerial change? It sounds harsh to say, but you just... I couldn't quite have envisaged Lampard being able to outfox Diego Simeone in the way that Thomas Tuchel did.
Possibly. I'm sure the Chelsea board might be sitting there thinking the decision's been vindicated so far, because that there does seem to have been... Chelsea do seem to be more organised, more tactically aware. Tuchel seems to be someone that is very happy to change formation, change system, change tactics, change players. And yeah, I mean, look, I don't think we should sort of forget that Lampard did very well to get Chelsea top of the group in the first place. They looked quite good in those group games, and beating Sevilla at the time was pretty notable. But yeah, I mean, Atletico Madrid are a total different proposition. And I've read a lot of stuff, and there was a lot of talk afterwards about how bad Atletico Madrid were. And I just thought that this was people forgetting perhaps 2014 and the semi-final where Atletico played exactly the same way. It was all about for them. They'd be quite happy if that had finished 0-0, and it only took a sort of moment of magic, genius from Giroud to prevent them from getting that, because I think Atletico are the classic side that will go away from home quite comfortable with the 0-0 scoreline, look for those away goals, just as they did in the second leg in 2014 where they won 3-1 at Stamford Bridge. So I take exception to people sort of trying to negate the significance of that result and the quality of that result. It was a tremendous one. And it's not over for the very reason I just discussed. I think even Atletico would be quite comfortable still trailing 1-0 because they'll think, well, we can soon get an away goal against this Chelsea defence, even though it's a defence that doesn't concede to anyone at the moment.
Liam, the bookies have got Chelsea as fifth favourites to win the Champions League behind City, Bayern, PSG and Liverpool. Do you think that's about right? And what is there to stop them from going all the way in the competition?
Yeah, I think you would have them below the elite tier of contenders. City and Bayern, obviously, look to be the cream of European football for me right now, in slightly different ways. And that would probably be the most fitting final for this year's competition. But Chelsea, particularly with the defence that Simon just alluded to, have a real chance. We saw in 2012 that if you can defend doggedly and get a little bit of luck when it gets to the knockout stage, things can break your way because a lot of these ties are decided by small moments. In the case of that first leg against Atletico, it was, you know, a marginal VAR check ruling that Hermoso had touched the ball rather than a Chelsea player, and therefore Giroud's moment of magic made the difference in a game that would otherwise have ended 0-0 and been perfectly within Simeone's plan. So these things can change at the drop of a hat, and I think Chelsea, they certainly have the talent to be a team that no one wants to play at this stage of the competition. And I think in Tuchel, they've got a coach who has a proven track record recently of being able to put his team in position to do well in ties like this. And I thought even in the Champions League final against Bayern, given that Bayern, I think, were clearly the best team in Europe at that point, PSG's game plan gave them the best possible chance of winning. And that reflected very well on Tuchel. So they've got a real chance. And if they can get past Atletico, I'm sure they will believe it too.
As mentioned, that second leg against Atletico Madrid takes place on Wednesday, the 17th of March, 8 o'clock UK time is the kickoff for that one. Now then, we've mentioned the name Anthony Barry a fair bit on the pod this season. The coach brought into the first team staff by Frank Lampard last summer, having previously worked at Wigan. He's taken a new role in the Republic of Ireland coaching setup. He'll continue his work with the Blues alongside this new job. What do you think to this, Simon? Steve Holland, the obvious example here, I guess, initially went to help out Gareth Southgate and was quickly moved into that role full time. Will Chelsea be concerned that something similar could happen here?
Well, I think that they've already also had a warning in terms of he was being targeted for a job elsewhere, which Tuchel had to sort of intervene and sort of talk him round to sort of saying that he's part of his backroom staff. I think from what I'm hearing, Anthony Barry certainly is an ambitious guy. But for the short term, as long as Chelsea can keep him, I think it's only a positive that he's also getting this experience of international football with the Republic of Ireland. It's not going to affect his club job too dramatically. He's obviously going to be away for the international break. But I think it's quite refreshing that Chelsea seem to have this coach as part of Tuchel's staff that does seem to have still quite a say, despite, you know, a new manager coming in. He certainly seems to be a lot more involved than say, Joe Edwards, who's obviously stuck around, but we're not seeing him quite as front and centre as Barry, or hearing from him as much as we are hearing from Barry on a match-by-match basis.
OK, next up today, join us on a metaphorical trip to Merseyside. So, before we next meet, Chelsea will have played both Liverpool and Everton in the Premier League. The game at Anfield, up first in the traditional 8:15 on a Thursday slot. Please God, / Richard Masters, let's do away with these nonsense kickoff times if and when we get back to normal. Where was I? Liverpool away. Liam, this is a really good time to be going to Anfield. I know they won at Sheffield United on Sunday, but four defeats in a row at home in the league. No wins in six, only two goals scored in that time. What on earth has happened?
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? I saw in the Sheffield United game that Klopp fielded his 14th different centre-back pairing of the season, which I think you have to come back to as the heart of Liverpool's problems, even when you're talking about the attack, because everything is linked. And the trade-offs that Liverpool have had to make in terms of moving Fabinho to centre-back, then moving Jordan Henderson to centre-back until he got injured, depleting their own midfield and therefore the supply lines to that front three. has affected them everywhere, and I think it's thrown off the kind of magical balance that they had for most of last season, and at the same time, I think Salah has continued to score regularly, but Mane has blown a little more hot and cold than maybe he did last year, and Roberto Firmino has kind of gone missing really in for sort of large swathes of this season, or at least it's appeared that way from the outside. You know, I just think generally they're a team that are kind of scrambling to re-find the identity that served them so well over the last 3 years, really, but particularly over the last two. So it is a good time for Chelsea to be playing them. Liverpool will probably feel like Chelsea aren't the worst opponents for them either, because Chelsea will want to have the ball. They'll want to play high up the pitch, which maybe suits Mane and Salah more than a lot of teams that Liverpool play. And Chelsea don't score many goals, so Liverpool's defensive issues might not be as tricky. So there are lots of different ways of looking at this. It will be a really, really difficult game for Chelsea. It was always going to be, but there's maybe a little bit more of a chink of light in terms of getting a result out of this game than there would have been.
Thomas Tuchel comes up against the man he replaced at Dortmund. He's got a woeful record against Jurgen Klopp. He's only won 2 of 14 meetings, although one of those victories came in the most recent game. That was Champions League group stage, 18-19, PSG beat Liverpool. Dom, that doesn't really matter, does it? There's no significance to that kind of thing. This is a different game in isolation.
Yeah, I think it matters even less, given that Tuchel's at a new club, still adjusting to that club, and that Liverpool are experiencing their first slump under Jurgen Klopp, really since he turned up at the club in, when was it, 2015? I mean, it is an intriguing tie, and it's actually, it's always gone up a notch just because Liverpool know that if they win this match, that they're back in the top four. And I think that heaps a bit more pressure on it. But I mean, I watched that game against Sheffield United yesterday, and yeah, Liverpool looked slightly more at it in an offensive way. Their forward line clicked, and I thought Curtis Jones was superb in midfield, the energy that he provided. But that defence still conceded chances. There's still a hesitancy there at centre half. I don't think either of the fullbacks, you know, the much vaunted fullbacks, people that Robertson and Alexander Arnold are players that are coveted around the world, and yet they've not had great seasons, particularly Alexander Arnold. I do think that Chelsea will look at that and think there's a fragility there that we can exploit.
I think it's time to play the A team track again because I raised the point ahead of Southampton that Chelsea would come to the Southampton's rescue. Okay, they only got a point, but Chelsea once again, you know, snapped the streak. And I think on Thursday night, I think, you know, put all your money on a Liverpool home win. just purely for this reason, Chelsea are the band-aid for all these clubs in trouble. But no, in all seriousness, I just thought,
come for Dom's predictions, stay for Simon's fatalism. That's the picture of this podcast.
But I just wanted to highlight, actually, in all seriousness, stop laughing at the back, that I think we should also just give another sort of shout out to Chelsea's unbeaten home record. Like, Liverpool's unbeaten home record was phenomenal. You know, they got to, I think, what was it, 68 games? But it was still fell short, almost like a whole season short of home games in the Premier League. Of Chelsea's record, I think, which stands at 86. I mean, it is a really, really difficult record to break, that one. And when a team as sort of fantastic as Liverpool got, you know, so close but so far, I think it's just another reminder of how remarkable that run was. I think between 2004-2008, off the top of my head.
Yeah, well, Chelsea actually haven't won at Anfield since 2014. Now, on Tuesday night, Liam and Simon will be hosting a Chelsea quiz for Athletic subscribers. In that spirit, who of the three of you can tell me who scored the goals for the Blues when they won at Anfield back in 2014?
Costa got one.
Yeah.
The other one.
What was the question?
Who scored the other goal for Chelsea?
2-1, wasn't it?
It was 2-1. Emre Can put Liverpool ahead early on. Chelsea came from behind to win it.
Fabregas?
Willian?
No. Here's a clue. Same Wasn't a penalty. Surname begins with the same letter as Costa.
Caballero. No.
this isn't going on the podcast.
Little bit further up the pitch, Liam. Just a little bit further up the pitch.
Cahill.
Yeah.
Held your head in shame, Simon Johnson.
Oh, man. All I can think of is Eden Hazard in the League Cup when I think of Anfield.
Yeah, that was Chelsea's last win there, wasn't it, 2018?
Can you not remember at least the 2014 Anfield mix zone, Simon? You must have had a good chat with Cahill after that.
I wasn't there. It was
poor Gary still plodding around Anfield now. So where's Simon? I want to talk to him about my goal.
But I do remember the post League Cup one where I did stop Eden Hazard to talk about that moment of magic. One of the best goals I've ever seen live.
Hazard, got one signature moment in him. We may just... Brilliant run by Hazard! Oh, that is absolutely phenomenal!
And just, it's that kind of magic that Chelsea are still sorely missing. You know, you sort of think a player like Hazard against Man United could have turned that 0-0 into a 1-0. So it was always an impossible task to sort of replace him. But yeah, my word, do they wish that they had a fit Eden Hazard in that 11.
Certainly do. Right, after Liverpool on Thursday, it's Everton at Stamford Bridge on Monday night. The scheduling of that game means we'll be with you a day later next week so that we can reflect upon it. Tom, is Everton at home a tougher match than Liverpool away at the moment?
Oh, I wouldn't necessarily go that far just because of Liverpool will see that as an opportunity to, as I say, to get back into the top four. However, Everton's away record is quite spectacular at the moment. It's at home that they're letting themselves down and the inconsistencies are creeping in. So in that respect, yeah, it's daunting. Although I do remember sitting here almost exactly a year ago and saying that Everton are going to give Chelsea a really, really tough game this weekend. And the last match, as it turned out, with supporters at the Bridge. And they were spanked 4-0, weren't they? It was an absolute masterclass at the time. So I think there is a bit of an unpredictability to Everton again, but much will depend, I suspect, with them on how they do midweek this week and in sort of what their general mood is when they rock up in West London.
Simon, we mentioned Tammy Abraham briefly earlier in terms of his Chelsea career. I was just looking at this game and thinking Dominic Calvert-Lewin's miles ahead of him in terms of the England reckoning now, isn't he?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Calvert-Lewin's had a few injury problems of late, but he's still cemented his spot in the squad, I'd say. I think Tammy Abraham is, unfortunately, he's slid sort of pretty far down the pecking order, I'd say. Even sort of, you'd have to put Danny Ings ahead of him, Harry Kane, obviously. So he's going to have a really strong end to the season. And that's probably one of the things he's worried about, not just his Chelsea place, but his chances of being in that England squad. Because we have an England squad being announced later this month for the World Cup qualifiers, which will be giving a bit of an indication. But I'd be quite surprised if Tammy's name's in it, unfortunately.
In terms of this pair of games, Liam, after them, things look a little bit more straightforward. Leeds, West Brom, Palace and Brighton to come. It means this Merseyside doubleheader is going to be crucial, isn't it, in terms of a top four finish?
Yeah, huge, huge. And they're going to tell us different things about where this team is under Tuchel, because we've already seen them play a succession of teams, inferior teams talent-wise that sat deep against them, and we're kind of happy to hit them on the counter-attack. You could say Everton could adopt that approach again. It certainly worked well for them against Lampard's Chelsea at Goodison in December. But these two teams have a lot more firepower to really test this Chelsea defence and really put them under pressure. So it's funny, I think these two games kind of fell together, didn't they, last season, just before the shutdown. I know one was a cup game and provided the kind of Billy Gilmore emergence that seemed to be breathing fresh life into Chelsea's season just as it was stopped. So if they can get a couple of results and a couple of performances as convincing as those, I think you can see the potential for this to give the whole squad really a big boost going into what will be the final stretch of this top four race.
Because the quiz question I posed in the Liverpool section was such a success, I'm going to lob another one in now. Can anybody remember the last time Chelsea lost at home to Everton in the Premier League, and who scored?
Was it Tim Cahill?
It was not Tim Cahill.
He scored in like a 4-4, didn't he?
Yeah, well, maybe 3-3 cup game. Anyway, this is a Premier League game.
Are we talking 1-0 to Everton? 92-93 type thing?
One season further on than that, Dom.
So is it a Paul Rideout or someone like
it
that?
It was Paul Rideout, absolutely. 1-0, Paul Rideout, 1994.
Oh, and they got him free, Rideout. And he scored. He was virtually unmarked. And Paul Rideout scores for Everton, a goal made by Anders Limpar.
Dom, I assume you're not eligible for the Chelsea quiz, by the way. But...
Liam, Paul Rideout was a striker that played up front in that era, before you were born.
I covered him in my ancient history degree, Dom.
Very good. That Everton game, 6 o'clock kickoff on Monday. Tune in next week to hear At Reaction. Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the under-18s enjoyed a 2-1 win away to Norwich this past weekend. Fabulous 40-yard chip from Joe Haig and a 17th goal of the season for Jude Soonsup-Bell secured the win in the under-18 Premier League South. And more good news for the under-18s too, in that the FA Youth Cup will resume this month following a pandemic-related pause. Blues awaiting the winner of the third-round tie between Fylde and Cambridge in round 4. That fourth-round game has to be played by the 20th of April. The under-23s in action tonight as we record. They play Leicester in a game that was moved from last Friday. Their game against Brighton, which was due to be played on Monday the 8th of March, has been moved back to Sunday to avoid clashing with the first team. You can watch both of those games live with me on Chelsea's social channels. And it's a big week ahead for the women's team. They play the first leg of their Champions League last 16 tie against Atletico Madrid at King's Meadow. 7 o'clock on Wednesday, the kickoff time for that one. That's just about it for this week's show. Before we go, let's hear what the chaps have been working on for Athletic subscribers to enjoy. We've plugged the quiz, which is happening on Tuesday. Simon and Liam hosting. Head to the Athletic for all the details. It's in aid of Prostate Cancer UK. Simon, what are you going to be working on this week other than quiz?
Well, by the time this comes out, there should be a piece, or certainly soon after this pod comes out, rather, there will be a piece about Ben Chilwell and his situation. I've actually been meaning to write it for a while, but other events keep overtaking it, like Callum Hudson-Odoi being subbed as a substitute. It's a classic example of going into a game with a plan A and it being relegated, because obviously football's unpredictable. And I've also got a lengthy interview with another Chelsea legendary backup goalkeeper in Ross Turnbull. I remember him, everyone. But where I've gone a bit different, rather than just talking to Ross about his memories of Chelsea and, you know, the certain players, etc., I've kind of done more of a piece where he's talking about the comparisons of where he works now. He's a goalkeeping coach for Hartlepool United, and the kind of facilities and kind of hurdles he has to overcome at Hartlepool compared to obviously his experience of the glamour and the glitz and the rich resources of Cobham. clearly there's a bit of a difference in what he's used to, including having to pump up the footballs, which, you know, you can imagine at Chelsea, it's not something a Thomas Tuchel has to worry about, is pumping up the footballs. But Ross is, that's just one of his many tasks as the goalkeeping coach there.
Good stuff. How about you, Dom? What's on your agenda this week?
I'm writing up an interview that I conducted with an Australian international called Craig Foster. I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks back. It's been one of the more demanding interviews to write about, largely because of the topics that it covers, the immigration crisis and offshore detention centres in Australia at the moment. And the case of Hakim Al Arabi, a refugee that was being held in a Thai prison, with Bahrain demanding he was deported to them, extradited to them. And Craig stepped in. He was a bit of a journeyman midfielder at Pompey and Palace back in the day, but he's become this human rights crusader, really, and thoroughly admirable bloke, and one of the most interesting people I've ever interviewed.
And that's the kind of stuff that you only really get on The Athletic, listener. Liam, how about you? Lots of pretty pictures in your Kante and Kovacic piece and some real substance to it too. What else are you going to be working on?
What the hell is a serious journalist like Dom doing slamming it with us?
I didn't want to say it, but yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Yeah, so that Kante Kovacic piece is live with lots of screen grabs to hopefully occupy your eyes, as well as my words. And later this week, I'll be writing about Kai Havertz.
No, what?
Seriously,
stop.
Whoa. Hold on. What?
I'm sure you'll all be astonished to know. Given that it's one of the big kind of unanswered questions or yet to be answered questions under Tuchel, I'm going to be looking at where exactly he could fit in this system that Tuchel's currently playing and kind of his potential as a false nine, maybe taking a little bit of a look at the games he played in that role for Leverkusen as well. And I'll also be writing about whatever comes out of the Liverpool game.
Good stuff. If you're not currently a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/ChelseaPod to sign up. And if you are a subscriber and you're taking part in the quiz with Liam and Simon on Tuesday night, I'd probably do some prep on Kai Havertz. I would imagine there might be a Kai Havertz round.
It's a whole section.
That'll be good fun. Do join Liam and Simon if you can. Many thanks for your company this week, listener. Join us a day later than usual next week. Until then, from myself, Dom, Liam, Simon, and producer Lucy, it's bye for now.
The Athletic.